Welcome to Is It Bedtime Yet? The podcast for parents about mental health and the experience of being a parent.
The podcast that discusses what it's like to be adults raising tiny humans that make us all ask, is it bedtime yet?
Welcome back to Is It Bedtime Yet? I'm Dr. Jen, and over here is Dr. Serene.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Serene.
Recently, we had the pleasure of collaborating with Generation.Mom. That's another podcast hosted by two moms.
Generation.Mom focuses on modern-day motherhood and what it's like to be a mom in today's dot-com world.
Check out their website at Generation.Mom.
And you can find them wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So be on the lookout for our collaboration episode coming out this month.
So let's get into today. So we have a guest with us today. We're sitting here with Jeff Munn. He's a published author, a marriage and family therapist, and a dad to a three-year-old. So welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So why don't you tell us, and well, we know a little bit about you already, but why don't you tell us again and our listeners a little bit about you and about the books that you wrote.
Sure. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm currently practicing in Santa Clarita, California, where I also live with my wife and 3.5-year-old daughter. And I've written a couple books. One of the books that I'll be talking to you guys about today is called Parenting a Video Game Addict. I wrote it because I was a video game addict. I understand it from the child's point of view, and now that I'm a parent, I understand a little bit more about parenting, and also through my training as a therapist, so I feel like the two can kind of come together and give me a unique way to talk about this. So that's what I'll be talking about today. And then I also have another book, which is an alternative to the 12 steps, and then I have a book for the basics of communication. It's called Life Skills Communication. So those awesome. Are all available on Amazon.
I'm really fascinated about the whole video game addict topic. It's so interesting to go from the perspective of somebody who's encountered that and who like knows what that's like as a child, and then to grow up and have training and experience and then become a parent and be able to write about it. That's right. So cool.
Yeah, it's I hope that the book can be helpful and give some people more perspective.
Yeah.
Video games have become like I don't know if I was just under a rock for so long, but I feel like recently they've been so huge. Like there's conventions.
You were under a rock for so long.
I was under a rock. Well, I also just have like a almost 7-year-old boy. So now I'm like learning about video games because they didn't interest me before this. They still kind of don't. But
that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I just. But I'm hearing more and more about like conventions and people go to trade things that have to do with video games.
I think
some really young kid or a teenager just won like a big, was it the Fortnite competition?
Well, I don't Fortnite's know, like a million kind, or something. Fortnite's kind of the big one right now, as far as I understand.
So how do you differentiate between like hobby / career and addiction?
Ultimately, it's a really good question. People ask me that all the time. Ultimately, I think it comes down to control. So it's not even necessarily how long or how much someone plays. So someone could play, for example, 3 hours a day, and then they have to be peeled away from it because they can't stop on their own. Or it could be someone who's trying to become a competitive gamer, and earn money, who practices 8 hours a day, but when it's time for them to do their homework or whatever else they need to do, they're able to stop and then go do that. So really it's about control. And what I would say to parents is to look at what happens when you try and stop your child from playing video games, or say it's time to switch gears. Mm. It's not unlike telling an alcoholic, you got to put down the bottle. If the person's not an alcoholic, they'll be like, all right, let's go. Mm-hmm. And if the person is an alcoholic, they'll fight it.
Right.
So, if your child seems to be sort of pulled in by the game, like there's just this magnetic draw that you can kind of feel. Addiction has a very distinct feel to it. Yeah. You can kind of, if you're tuned in with your kid, you can sense that they're just like, wow, this is something that they really need on a level that they don't other hobbies and crafts and things like that. So it's just important to look at the level of control and the level of craving that they have, and what's their mood like when they're not playing? Do they get very grumpy? Do they go through almost withdrawal symptoms? So it's a lot of things to look for.
And I like what you said about the individual that's playing games for several hours on end and has that sense of control of, okay, now it's time to do something else. And it sounds like that almost has a purpose to it. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a mindless kind of sitting and zoning out. It's like they're almost like how a basketball player would practice hours on end to perfect their trade.
That's a really good, that's a good way to look at it, right? Like a basketball player, if they're practicing, you know, sometimes they practice for hours and hours a day and they practice and they have a purpose for practicing and then they're done.
Right.
It's not like they're just like stuck in practice and when it's time to stop practicing, they throw a fit or anything like that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that you kind of gave all of those descriptors around it, because at first, like when you're talking about that transition, the difficulty with transitioning and saying like, okay, it's time to stop. And like, do they have a really hard time with that? Cause I'm sure you can relate as the parent to a 3-year-old.
Sure.
That for a lot of people, for a lot of little kids, especially, transitions are just hard.
Right.
And so I think, you know, that it's important to look at not just the, is it hard for them to transition out of it, but all of those other facets that you talked about too, because for some kids, for some teens, for some adults even, transition is just a difficult thing for them in general.
It's a skill that has to be learned.
Exactly. But it sounds like there's so many other facets of this too that people should look at in terms
of. Right. And you know your child, and every child is different, and it's really about looking at how their transition from video games is compared to like other things, you know? So when it's time to come inside, if they throw a fit, if they throw an equal fit, regardless of what you're to having them stop, then that's just kind of who they are.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, if they're pretty good at transitioning in other areas.
And then, too.
Yeah. And then you tell them to put the iPad away and they throw themselves on the floor or, you know, start getting rageful. That tells you something.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, so speaking of like iPads, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of stuff in the media about screen time and just talking about screen time in general for kids. And there's a lot of conflicting studies, conflicting thoughts around it. Do you have specific thoughts or ideas around screen time? What's appropriate? What's not appropriate?
Yeah, it's another good question. One of the things that just I struggle with when listening to like the news, listening to people talk about these topics is nuance and details don't make for good television. They don't make for good news stories, right? We want to see a news story that's like, oh, video games have been shown to do this.
Right.
Or video games are bad or they are good or, you know, and it's like, it's a very nuanced topic. There are kids that have just naturally, because of nature and nurture, but naturally just have a better ability to self-regulate. And they're not, you can give them all the screen time in the world and they'll stop themselves. You know, and my daughter is a little bit like that, you know, which is mind-blowing to me, because as, when I was a kid, if I had an iPad, I would never, that would be my life.
It
would
be
my alternate life would be the iPad. But she'll kind of put it down and be like, okay, now I want to play a game, you know, like a board game or something like that. And that's just her. And so I think it really is a matter, and I talk about this a lot in my book, it's a matter of just being tuned in to your kid and seeing what their patterns are and being tuned into their mood. So I think some kids are just going to take to screen time much more than others. Some kids, it really feeds them in a way that is addictive. And for others, it's just more of, you know, it's more of a hobby. If you find that the amount of screen time your child has is having an impact on their mood, they're not able to be productive, or they're not socializing, you know, if it's starting to have a negative impact on their life, then it may be time to put in some limitations. And it's always better to do it early than it is to do it later.
Yeah.
What about content? Because I always feel like, and this is not based on any research or study, just watching my own kids, I always feel like I'm more lenient when I'm okay with the content of screen time. Like, there are some games that are, you know, you really have to think, and they're,
like they're more educationally content, like puzzles.
Yes. And like those, I'm kind of okay. Like, fine, you could have 5 more minutes. As opposed to some, you know, YouTube videos when they're watching it, I feel like I'm much more strict. Do you feel like that plays a role? Is content important, or is it just the stimulation they're getting from being in front of a screen?
I think it's a good question. I think it's completely it can be completely different. Mm-hmm. Watching a mindless, silly YouTube video where someone's playing Minecraft or something
right.
is not terribly stimulating. It's not a terribly interactive. It's not interactive right. at all. As opposed to, like, you know, there's a lot of great educational stuff on iPads and, right. and tablets and stuff now that I would be happy to let my daughter use for a couple hours, you know, because it's yeah. teaching her how to read. It's teaching her sounds. It's a type of interactive learning that we never had access to as kids. So I really do think it depends. And again, this is about being tuned into your kid and knowing what your child is doing with the device.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of what you're talking about is the important key piece of this is active parenting.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is it...
I mean, it's easier said than done.
Right. But,
yeah.
But you know, it sounds like it makes a big difference whether you're just throwing an iPad at your kid and saying, here, mm-hmm. and then walking away and using it like as a babysitter, let's say, right. versus, here, let's put on this game or let's do this thing or I'm going to talk to you about the content of what you're playing or what you're doing and like yeah. making it more something that you're engaging with them or that you're in tune with what their needs are, you're mm-hmm. in tune with what their personality is and maybe what kind of limits they need help setting because they might have a hard time setting. Right. So it's all about just being more present as a parent, I think, and being more active.
Yeah. And, you know, I get it. It's easier said than done. And, you know, there are definitely times where I'm burnt out as a parent and I'm overwhelmed 100%. And I'm like, here, please
yeah.
just watch.
Yeah.
Paw Patrol.
Go on with your bad self. With
yeah, you know, but it, just leaning into the process
oh, yeah.
of being a little more tuned in and a little more aware of your child's specific style
right.
of using technology,
yeah.
and, you know, and really being tuned into the impact that it has on them.
Yeah, but even on those days where you feel burnt out and you're just handing her and saying, here, watch the Paw Patrol, you do that knowing what her personality is and what her needs are.
Right.
You know, you've done that assessing portion already and, right. you know.
I'm going to bring this up. Momo, again.
Oh, we've talked about Momo before.
Oh, yeah, Momo. We actually don't let her watch YouTube because okay. YouTube Kids specifically is actually not regulated.
That's what we've heard.
I think what I've understood is that someone can just upload a video mm-hmm. and label it. This is kids stuff.
Yeah.
And then they can do that. I don't know that Momo was a real thing, though. I thought that was a hoax.
I thought it was a hoax, too.
Everybody says that they know somebody who has seen it, or you know, but I have no idea.
Or that they've seen
or
it.
That, yeah.
But I've never, I don't know.
Momo or no Momo. It's
Momo or no.
Momo or no Momo. There is a lot of stuff that they shouldn't be seeing
right.
on YouTube.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a different one. I believe with YouTube, I mean, we'll get into this is technical stuff, but I believe with YouTube, you can also whitelist certain videos. So instead of when you prohibit certain videos, that's called blacklisting. You're making a list of the things they can't see.
Okay.
A whitelist is a list of the things that they can see. Everything else they can't. So you could just have specific videos that they can watch, or specific channels maybe. Mm-hmm. I haven't used it personally, but.
That's cool.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
I believe that's an option.
Well, it helps to be able to regulate some of that, like, totally unregulated content. On
sure.
there. Like, if it, yeah.
Sure, and we can't, you know, we do need to be tuned in, but we mm-hmm. can't watch every single
right.
thing that they're watching.
Yeah.
And so
right.
sometimes technology, you can utilize the technology to do some of that mm-hmm. for you. You know, there's things like OpenDNS is something you can put on your router at home,
oh.
your Wi-Fi router, which can limit certain websites and it can limit certain times, you know.
Serena and I are here taking notes, so I'm like, I've never heard of these things.
There's a lot of things that you can utilize to help you with that.
That's awesome.
Well, in terms of content now, mm-hmm. Violence in video games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of parents that are more hypervigilant about that, and their concern is that if they play video games that have violence in it, then that's going to teach their children to be violent, or
right. and even politicians bring right. that up all that time. And anytime you talk about like gun control
sure.
or like, you know, mass shootings, that comes up all the time. It's like violence in video games and other, you know, content that kids can access.
Right.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about that because I grew up in the era of Mortal Kombat. Like, I know that was what all the guys my age were
right.
into.
Street Fighter.
Yes. So. I mean, that was huge back then, but now it's like, well, let's kind of regulate this and mm-hmm. watch our kids and make sure they're not
mm-hmm.
playing violent video games, and what do you think about that? Do you think it has an impact? Do you know anything about this?
I think there's an age-appropriate level of violence in video games. My experience has been that most children seem to be able to differentiate between video game violence and real violence. Now, do I think there's maybe some connection for some people? Possibly. If a child is so immersed in video games and has emotional problems, mm-hmm. and has inattentive parents and has not been socialized and has a resentment right. against society, you right. know, then might the video games give them some ideas? Sure. Sure, I'm not right. going to, you know, again, I don't like black or white right. answers for anything. I think it's very possible that it could contribute. Right. It's very hard for me to believe that it's the primary factor in any act of violence. That it's mm-hmm. like, this is an otherwise great kid, straight A student, yeah. but, you know, he played GTA. Because you can just go around right. shooting random people, and it's very lifelike.
Yeah. Right.
And I've played it, and there's no part of me that plays it, and then it's like, oh, this would be great well, yeah. to do in real
let's
life.
Let's go outside and do
right,
this.
Yeah. Right, right. So, I think most kids can differentiate, but it's something to be mindful of. And just mm-hmm. also, yeah. you know, you don't want necessarily like a 5-year-old playing a
right.
game where they're going to be exposed to murder and things like that. So
you don't? Yeah, not, that's a bad idea.
Not generally.
Yeah, but I mean, I really like yeah. that response because I'm a big advocate in general of like nature and nurture when people talk about like nature right. versus nurture with things. So I always like I completely yeah. agree with you that nothing is black and white like that. And it sounds like what you're saying is that there's so many other components, and it's kind of like that. It's basically like a perfect storm situation that it has to yes. be like this kid is already has this preoccupation with violence and has. Disassociated parents perhaps, or like you know, resentment or dysregulation of emotions or whatever it
right,
is
right.
and also they get ideas from video games and right. it's not that every kid who plays it, you know, it's a correlation, maybe not a causation right. and yeah. yeah.
And I liked way in the beginning when you said most kids should know the difference mm-hmm. between video games and real life, and I'm aging myself, but remember Duck Hunt?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
I remember playing Duck Hunt, and when that dog crept up and laughed, I would get so upset with him. Yes. I would get so angry. Like, I just killed all these ducks, and you're laughing? This is sad. But, like, you know, to have that distinction of, like, I'm killing these ducks.
A sociopathic dog.
Right.
Right.
But you're crazy for laughing.
That's funny.
So, yeah. I hated that dog. Still do.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
He's just there to taunt you.
Yeah.
To make you play some more. Right. To yeah. show him who's boss.
To shame you into that yeah. experience.
Yeah. Right. But I was like, this is a sad situation. This is all sad. Yeah. And I'm engaging in it. But, you know. But yeah. Fun story. All right. How do you deal with video game addiction? So when somebody mm-hmm. comes to you and they say, my kid or me, I have a video game addiction. What
okay.
happens? Yeah.
Good question. It's a process. Yeah. It's a really big process. It depends on a lot of things. So I start with, and my book tries to follow sort of the sequence of how I think it should be approached. It starts with just sort of assessing the severity of what's going on, right? Like mm-hmm. assessing whether it is an addiction mm-hmm. or whether this is maybe just a habit that's a little bit out of balance, or is this really an addiction? And depending on the severity, that's going to determine what kind of goals you set. Some children may need to be completely cut off from video games altogether, although I don't think most will. Unlike drugs, for example, so if someone's an alcoholic, you stop drinking alcohol. Right? Right, and that's pretty straightforward. And you stop drinking all kinds of alcohol because they're all pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Video games are very different. All video games have unique characteristics and unique things that make them addictive and pull you in. So if you remember back in the day, like Super Mario Brothers, mm-hmm. right, it's pretty hard to get addicted to that game. I mean, you can play it for, you know, a couple hours. Right. That would be like a binge, mm-hmm. would be playing it for a couple hours, and then you're done. Either the game ends or you get bored.
Right.
Games today are very, many of them are very different. So there are some games that are massively multiplayer online games like mm-hmm. World of Warcraft, things like that, even though that's kind of old news at this point. But mm-hmm. Fortnite, games that have the social aspect too, where it's
are those the ones you're talking to other people through your headset?
Yeah, okay. You can like wear a headset and okay. you're talking to other people. And, you know, my friend's going to be online later today and I want to, you know, we're going to play today. It's, mm-hmm. There starts to yeah. be the social obligation tied into playing video games too. So certain video games they may have to stay away from while others they can play. It's I can keep rambling about it for a while because it's there's a lot involved. Right. But it generally starts with assessing how severe the problem is, looking at what you want the goal to be, and then setting boundaries to achieve that goal, mm-hmm. whether it's complete abstinence from video games or abstinence from certain types of video games.
Is this something, so like if a parent listening is like, oh, I recognize my kid has traits of maybe video game addiction, or like, oh, I've been thinking that maybe we need to take a step or do something. Mm-hmm. Is this something that normally you'd recommend for parents to seek help from a professional on trying to help assist this yeah. process?
I think so, because this is almost always going to be a family issue. Mm-hmm. I think family therapy is ideal. A lot of parents want to just send their child to a therapist and say, mm-hmm. here, please fix my kid.
He's addicted. We know addicted. How that goes.
Yeah, you know, and it's very common. And it's understandable, too, because they've tried everything and they're out of ideas. But it's going to be a matter of the parents having empathy and understanding what the child is going through and educating themselves. I talk about this a lot in the book, too. Much of this book is focused on the parents' own work mm-hmm. with themselves rather than setting boundaries with the child. I mean, that's part of it, too. But for the most part, it's about developing empathy, understanding what a video game addiction is, understanding the role that video games play in your child's life, and what you're potentially taking away from them if you tell them they have to stop. Mm. So there's a lot of work that parents have to do in that realm.
I love that perspective from yeah. of the book, because so often we want to have a podcast, another episode about mm-hmm. this. We see parents that have, you know, the child is an identified patient, whether it's video game addiction or whatever, behavioral issues. And
right.
I love that it kind of focuses on the parent. And a lot yeah. of, sounds like a lot of like insight work has to be done as well
yeah.
on the parent's end.
Yeah. And it's going to be about everyone being on the same page yeah. too, which is why family therapy is so important. You know, if the child is living with mom and dad, you want mom and dad to be on the exact same right. page. It gets even harder if mom and dad are separated or divorced and then the child is in two different households. I've seen that. And that's really, really tough because mm-hmm. the child will have some boundaries. And this goes beyond video game addiction. Right. But, you know, the child right. has some boundaries in one house and not boundaries in the other. And that can be really rough. So it's super important for everyone to be on the same page and for the boundaries to be very consistent.
I was wondering, so you said that growing up you had video game addiction
oh, yeah.
stuff going on. How did that play out? What did that look like? Like, how did you come to recognize that was an issue? And what did ending that addiction look like for you?
I didn't realize that it was an issue until about my 20s, because mm-hmm. that's my early 20s, because that's when I found the video games that had the online component, mm-hmm. which I had never experienced before as a kid. As a kid, I was very pulled in by video games, and I would play for many hours, but I would still eventually get tired, and I had hobbies and stuff because the video games, you know, they were only so, there's only so much you could do in them. So it wasn't until I found these kind of bottomless pit video games mm-hmm. where there is no end
right.
and there's always more you can do. And it's, you can play 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. One can play 24 hours a day and not get tired of it.
Yeah.
And so when I realized, and I had also, you know, I'm a recovering addict in terms of substances and alcohol as well. So mm-hmm. I saw the pattern. I was like, oh, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with this. And so I had to just alter my behavior and look for a different way to have a relationship with video games.
So it sounds like it was a lot of that insight work that you were talking about for parents to have, that it was almost required of yourself, and that you had yeah. to sort of train yourself through that whole process.
Yeah, and there was some trial and error. You yeah. know, I slipped back into it a few times. There were some games where I'm like, oh, I can play this moderately, and then I got it, and I was like, no, I can't. you know, so, and then there's also the emotional work, too, mm-hmm. because video games played a big part in my ability to soothe myself. Mm. You know, I have anxiety and prone to depression, family history of it. So, you know, having a video game, having an alternate reality to escape into was just so soothing on a level that it isn't for some other kids. And so I had to look at underneath that, what is driving me to want to just escape in general? And that was a lot of work, and it's work I continue to do to this day. But it's also an important aspect.
Yeah, and it sounds like it led you to the work that you do now.
It did.
I'm gonna steer in a different direction right now.
Go for it.
Steer away.
Yeah, we'll follow.
All right. But thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
For parents, mm-hmm. apps, social apps, mm-hmm. Facebook, Instagram, whatever, Snapchat. Oh,
yeah.
For older, you know, for our generation, let's say, that we're all really into. Pinterest is life, you know.
Sure.
What can you tell us about that?
Oh man, that's a whole series of podcasts. I mean, uh-huh. social media has just changed so much about the way we interact mm-hmm. and what socializing looks like, and
yeah,
like it's unbelievable how kids can be bullied and harassed mm-hmm. in ways that just were not even possible
before.
You know, just like have their reputations completely ruined, and it can be really, really toxic.
Yeah.
I see some benefit to kids having access to social media, mm-hmm. Just in terms of, you know, we do want our kids to fit in. It's important for kids to fit in, you know, and if all the other kids have a social media account, it's understandable that, you know, okay, we can see about that. Right. But again, this is about active parenting, really paying attention, helping them understand that social media is not reality. What you're seeing these people post, and, you know, don't compare yourself to them. Mm-hmm. It just really requires a lot of education and close monitoring. But yeah, social media is such a complex topic, and it can be nice, and it can be helpful, and it can be... Yeah. super toxic.
We talk about it often in terms of parents on social media and mm-hmm. looking, you know, seeing accounts from other parents and what other parents are doing and feeling that like
comparing themselves or feeling like not enough. And so it's so interesting that it's such a difficult and like potentially toxic environment, not just for kids but for the parents too.
Oh, and you're talking specifically about parents.
Yeah, especially for kids.
Well, with parents, I know a few parents that had joined like a mother's group on Facebook to, you know, just to get quote-unquote support. Yeah. And it was kind of the opposite. Like, there's something about social media where people just are not as accountable for what they say.
No filters.
They feel a little safe. Yeah, they feel a little safer to just say whatever. And, you know, this one mother in particular that I was talking to was part of this Facebook new mothers group, and mm-hmm. they were just shaming her for parenting a certain way, shaming her for switching to formula. Oh, mm-hmm. gosh. And that was this whole other thing. But, like, kind of like with real life, we have to choose our friends pretty carefully and cut toxic people out of our life. But there's this weird drive when it comes to social media to like accumulate as many friends as possible and to have as big of an audience as possible. And that's not always a good idea, because whenever your audience is big enough, you're going to get criticism and shaming and people who think you're just the devil and stuff. So, you know, I think it's better to have a small group of people who really support you and are not toxic than it is to really get too much into the social media stuff. But I can see where it has a purpose as well.
Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting to me, you know, because you were talking about at first the dynamic with kids and social media, and then we talked about like the parents and social media. It's so interesting that it mirrors each other.
Right,
like it can be positive, it could be supportive in some ways, it could be a way for kids to reach out to their friends, it could be a way for parents to connect to other parents or get support. But like you were talking about, there's the keyboard warriors, there's no filter, like if mm-hmm. people want to accumulate like big groups of people, and then, you know, you're always going to have people attacking or bullying, mm-hmm. whether you're children or adults.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to video games. I just had to get my social media fix in, sorry. Right. A lot of people might question whether or not video games are actually addictive because we're so used to having, like, drug addiction or alcohol addiction or, you know, a substance that you're ingesting. Right. So are video games addictive?
Great question. People ask me that all the time, and then my answer is long and complicated because it's a complicated topic. I think what's important that a lot of people are having a hard time with is just the word addiction. Uh-huh. For me, all that means is that the person experiencing the behavior is having a hard time stopping or moderating on their own. To me, that's an addiction. If they've had negative consequences also, and they can't seem to just stop on their own, that's what I see as an addiction. So, and then it's important to understand that anything that releases dopamine, which is the pleasure chemical in our brains, anything that releases that can potentially turn into a compulsion. Eating, sex, video mm-hmm. games, gambling, all of that. So it's not so much about the video games as it is about the relationship to video games that the child has. That being said, there certainly are some video games that are fine-tuned to tap into that dopamine button that we have in our brain. There are a lot of things, I mean, and they've been tailor-made. Video game developers have figured out all the tricks to really get in there and release dopamine. For example, a little bit of randomness in some games. So if you've ever played Candy Crush, Candy Crush was a classic kind of addictive, and it's still addictive, and it's still there, and they make obscene amounts of money.
I'm sure.
But there's a little bit of randomness, which kind of mimics the reward of gambling, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes sometimes you pull the slot machine handle and you win, and sometimes you lose, and that intermittent kind of winning, that intermittent reinforcement really pulls you in because the next time. And so with Candy Crush and games like that, there's a little bit of randomness. That's one thing. Social reinforcement is huge. Being part of a group, having other people who expect you to be online at a certain time can definitely have kind of an addictive effect. You know, you feel this obligation. The fact that you can achieve things in a video game that are seen as real achievements by other people and you're validated for them as well is also a really kind of addictive thing. So my classic example of this is in the game World of Warcraft, you know, the point is for everyone to get together, or point a part of the game, is for everyone to get together and take down this really big boss. And to do that, you need someone in the group who is a healer, or multiple people who are healers, and they're the ones casting spells, giving everyone their health back. Those are really important people in this alternate universe. And so there might be a kid who, like, doesn't feel important in their real life, doesn't feel like they have any skills, doesn't feel like anyone wants to hang out with them. But then when they're in this alternate universe and they're, say, a healer, they're really desired. They're like, oh, we need a healer for this, you know, quest we're going to go on. And so they're in this alternate world where they have a purpose. The things that they do and the accomplishments that they achieve are actually seen as real and legitimate and valuable to other people. So that can be tremendously, tremendously
That's so interesting.
Addictive as well. So yeah, there are definitely aspects of video games that are inherently addictive. But again, some kids will respond to that and some won't.
Right. Like, it almost depends on, like, their hardwiring to begin with.
Right. Yeah. If your child has a lot of good socialization and has real friends and has a hobby and has developed skills and actually has learned how to find that sense of reward in the real world, it may not be as big of a draw to get that in the video game world. In fact, it may feel cheap and fake, mm-hmm. as it does for a lot of people. It's like, oh, I'm wasting my time. I can go out there and actually be doing something real.
Yeah.
But for children who don't have that, the video game thing is very real, and it can be, and it's so lifelike and so immersive mm-hmm. these days that it can almost be an adequate replacement for real life for a lot of kids.
Oh, yeah.
Not even almost,
and
it can be.
And I was going to say, for adults too, I knew people,
I knew people
in college, when I was in college, who dropped out of college because they were so into things like WoW.
Yeah.
And it just became like all consuming for them, and they couldn't function outside of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Look at you dropping acronyms.
Wow. Wow. Oh yeah, wow.
You know, I'm a little bit video game literate.
Yeah, so yeah. It's again, it, I think at the end of the day, it's about really understanding your child,
yeah.
being tuned in, making sure that your child has a well-rounded life with a lot of different, you know, types of social interaction and different hobbies, and making sure there's balance in there, and then staying on top of any potential places where things are getting out of balance or getting compulsive, and then jumping in there.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, so Jeff, how can our listeners find out more about you, find out more about your books, and how can they reach you?
So you can find me, you can find my books on Amazon. They're all available on Amazon, either paperback or Kindle. And you can just search my name, Jeff Munn, M-U-N-N, and my book should pop up. The video game book is called Parenting a Video Game Addict. You can email me directly at jeffmft@gmail.com, and you can check out my blog, practicallysane.net.
I like that. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is great. So for our listeners, if you have any questions for us, any thoughts about this topic, thoughts for future topics, you can email us at isitbedtimeyetpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us in social media. We're on Instagram, isitbedtimeyetpodcast, with underscores between each of the words, and on Facebook at isitbedtimeyetpodcast. And don't forget to check out our Patreon. Until next time, this is Dr. Jen and Dr. Serene asking, is it bedtime yet?